Welcome to Market View with Ike Ios and Friends. The show that not only reveals and analyzes the inside story on today's market news, but also uncovers the areas where investors can make money right now. Market Views with Ike Ios and Friends is being brought to you by GM Capital Group.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. Mike Ios, your host for Market Views. Today's guest, my very good friend, Mr. Glenn Neely. Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Doing good, Ike. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Glenn, you and I have been following the markets for all of our adult life.
Yeah, I was about 20, I think.
Well, I started a little later. But nevertheless, our track record is well documented by Timer Digest and other sources.
Right. So I was looking at Timer Digest from January 30th, which was just a few days ago, and you're at the very top right-hand corner of the list of their annual reports. So it shows that, I'm looking at the list here, it shows you're in the top 10 for the last 8 years and the last 10 years on the S&P. So congratulations on that.
Well, let you.
It's your horn, right? You're always tooting everybody else's horn.
Okay, well, let me congratulate you for being among the top 10 for the last 5, 8 to 10 years. I don't want anybody to think that we're trying to pat each other on the back. But the very fact is, perhaps, given our track record, maybe we can help some people, whoever wants to listen, to get a better idea about what is going on in the markets.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
You're looking at the market from a whole different angle than I do. Your methodology and my methodology are different. Nevertheless, at the present time, we're pretty much at the same conclusion, correct?
Yeah, that the underway theory, it's a very unpredictable market environment. It's been that way ever since about 6 months after the low in 2009. It was really bad for the 2010 period. It's finally getting a little bit better, but it's still really difficult, especially in the U.S. stock market, to predict anything that's going to happen day to day or week to week.
Both your methodology and my methodology deal with intermediate term trading.
Well, I do have short term trading, but also intermediate and longer term. So I cover sort of three different time frames. Futures is more the shorter term, and I have equities for longer term, as in ETFs, for longer term trading based on weekly charts.
Mine is pretty much risk based. Now, when you deal with risk, what people need to understand is simply this. Once you get into a high risk area, the period during which that risk remains could be 1 month, could be 1 year.
Right.
Now, if you look at my track record, which is listed and verified by Time and Digest, we first got into such area, according to my system, in November of 1999. It was 29th of November 1999. Now, the market at the time, if you measure by the S&P, was at 1407. It topped at 1505, and that was on August 23 of 2000. So right. 11 months later, we were up about 8%, and then the market topped out, and it lost about 50%. We were at a similar reading on April 17th of 2007. Back then, the S&P was at 1471. It topped at 1565 on October 10th of 2007. Like later, about 100 points higher. So my point is, if you go back to 1998, twice my system gave a high risk reading about 10 months before the market experienced a 50% decline.
Wow.
During those 10 months, the market advanced another 7-8%.
Right
now, I'm getting the same reading.
How do you get these readings?
The indicator that I use is not just one thing. It's a weighted average indicator of several other indicators that have to do with interest rates, breadth, and momentum, as well as earnings.
Does volatility come into play?
Yes. Right now, I'm saying the same readings that we had back in 99, the same readings we had back in 2007. What that tells me is the market could very well advance another 8-10% over the next 10 months. But the ensuing decline could very well be between 40-50%. You just hang on to your cash and you wait. Now, if I'm not mistaken, you are pretty much in the same predicament, but from a different angle, right?
Yeah, you know, wave theory defines unpredictable periods in, I guess you could say, a different kind of way, where it's always present during certain waves of larger patterns. So unpredictability is always present during B waves, and the closer you are to the middle of a B wave, the more unpredictable it gets. And it's always unpredictable in the center leg of any pattern. And the B wave is generally the center leg of an ABC correction. It's the third wave in a five-wave move. It's the X wave of a complex correction. So whatever is the very center leg of a pattern under wave theory will always be the point where you have the most options going forward. It's sort of like, you know, leaving Los Angeles and driving to New York. There's only a few highways you can probably take to get out of town. But the further away you get from Los Angeles, the more variable the different paths you could take to eventually end up in New York. And as you get closer to New York, then the fewer roads you have to get into the city. So the unpredictable part and the most flexible part is right toward the center, where there could be, you know, dozens of different options or possibilities or wave counts that could explain what's going to happen down the road. But eventually, as you get to the end, then everything starts clearing up, the possibilities start declining, you get back to one scenario. So under wave theory, it's always the center portion of a pattern that's unpredictable. And unfortunately, as we stand right now, starting from the high in 2000, wave theory indicated right as that bear market began that we had to go through at least 20 years of a correction before we could possibly get to the end. And it could even be 30 years. So if it's 20 years, we're right just past the middle of that 20-year period. And inside of that 20-year correction, or 20 to 30-year correction, we also have some smaller patterns, one starting from the high in 2007. And we're just past the middle of that pattern. And then there's some potentially smaller patterns that are also closer to the middle of their development. So it makes it extremely difficult to say what's going to happen. And whenever a market's in this sort of center period, it's extremely susceptible to news events, unexpected news events that can just all of a sudden push the market dramatically up or down without notice. And that's, I think, what you're talking about.
And I believe that this is your conclusion as well, right?
Yeah, it's the market's extremely susceptible to any kind of national, international news, you know, any kind of problems. It can react to quite significantly, because most investors, according to wave theory right now, are not heavily invested. They're sort of unsure, or they're quick to change their minds, or there's a lot of money on the sidelines, and so things could change one way or the other very quickly, and that leaves it wide open, you know, to almost anything taking place.
Do you have any thoughts with regards to dangers coming from Europe?
Well, that's slightly outside my realm, but...
Well, I do. It's not Greece that people ought to worry about. Is a European recession coming from Greece, Portugal, Spain, Italy, France, and Belgium. 50% of the S&P earnings come from overseas.
Wow.
With Europe in recession for the second half of 2012, I just cannot see how analyst expectations with regard to S&P earnings can be met. And that is where the risk comes from. Not from Greece defaulting, it comes strictly from S&P 500 companies not being able to meet their earnings expectations.
So just a massive reduction in consumer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's something that we've experienced some of that, but you know, since 2000, if you remember back, and it really perplexed me for quite a while, is that when I was anticipating the crash in 2000 and 2002, you know, it happened as I expected. But what really bothered me, and I didn't quite understand for about 5 years, is how come the economy didn't get bad during that drop to 2002's low. And I just said, I just couldn't quite get what was going on. And it finally dawned on me, because that was just the very first leg of a 20 or 30 year correction or bear market. So we were in the very, very early phases of, you know, the correction.
Do you know Jim Dines?
I know who he is.
Okay. Jim Dines is a good friend of mine, another mentor, and told me this. He said, look, you do not get a decline in Nasdaq of the magnitude we had now without seeing some follow through in the economy.
Right.
The decline in Nasdaq is a prologue of what you're going to see 5 years later. And he goes, spot on, because he told me that in 2002, and actually the economy peaked out in 2007, right. Exactly 5 years later.
Yeah.
That comes from a guy who's been following the market since 1955.
Yeah. Wow. Puts you and I to shame, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
So an extra 25 years longer than me.
Yeah.
But, when I saw that correction and I saw that the economy really wasn't that impacted, I was perplexed for a while. But then it finally dawned on me, it's because it was the very early stages and that the bad part wouldn't take place until halfway and maybe three-fourths of the way through. And I think we're finally starting to experience that now, where after 10 years of a sideways market and 10 years of declining incomes and declining house values and all the other stuff that's going on, that's finally having an impact to the point where it's really affecting a majority of people's lives, not just a small number who were speculating in the stock market during the first, you know, 2 or 3 years of the bear market. So now it's much broader based. And if Europe joins in with this kind of decline, so there's a massive reduction in consumption and product creation in Europe and in America, that's going to just perpetuate and make things even worse. And probably we're going to have another round of increasing unemployment and declining stock market values and failing companies and potentially failing banks and probably real estate going down again, which brings us back to things I've talked to you before about, which to me, even though the evidence isn't strong yet, I still feel that the long-term trend will have to be deflationary or not inflationary, just because there's so many negatives long-term that will keep the economies from growing. What do you think about that?
Well, my conclusion is pretty much the same. I can sum it up like this. The market is in a high-risk environment. This environment can't continue for another 7 to 10 months. During that period, the market can advance another 8 to 10%, but the ensuing decline would be in excess of 40%.
I assume the higher it goes, the more downside and faster it might drop, right?
Yeah. So the question is, if you're an intermediate look to long-term investor, like 1 to 5 years, do you want to capture the next 8 to 10% at the risk of losing 40 or 15, or you just stay in cash, you keep your peace of mind, and you wait for the next wave down? All I can say is that we are in a high-risk environment. High-risk environments tend to be unpredictable with regards to how long they will last. They can last 2 months. They can last 12 months. On average, going backwards, they have lasted about 9 months.
Wow.
Okay?
That's basically what happened in 2008 to 2009.
Yeah, and the same thing in 1999 until 2000.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, my personally, the way that I've been dealing with this is I've been mostly focused on just saving as much money as I can, having it in low risk to dividend paying kind of things, high dividend paying investments. I've avoided, you know, any risky stock kind of investments. And I really think I'm going to probably be in that kind of environment for maybe another 10 years. I think getting guaranteed income, guaranteed dividends, and as high interest as you can, and forgetting about appreciation, I think is really the way to go, is the way to go for, you know, the next 5 or 10 years. What do you think about that?
Unfortunately, my system does not go out that long, but I can concur for the next 6 to 10 months. And then I will have to reevaluate.
Yeah.
I allow for higher prices for the next 6 to 10 months. I think we're going to see higher prices.
But not significantly higher, right?
Between 8 to 10%.
Yeah.
But this kind of advance will be subject to a 40 to 50% decline.
And this could be sort of a random, would this be instigated by news, you think? Or what would you think is the catalyst for such a decline?
I believe the catalyst will be this. Right now, if it wasn't for central bank intervention around the world, whether it is the Central Bank of Japan, the ECB, or the Fed, we would have already seen the results of... Exactly. If you know anything about poker, you will know two things. First is you can win a hand, but you can lose the game. And
right.
Second is you can win a hand without having to show your cards. Central banks around the world right now are winning a hand without having to show their cards. If they had to show their cards, probably they would lose. We're playing according to the rules of the game, and they don't have to show their cards.
The game of deception.
Exactly. But I don't believe you can win the game all the way to the end. My point is, we can see higher prices for the next 6 to 10 months. And we can see higher prices as much as 8 to 10%. But beware, because after that, we're going to have to settle for the game. And I don't think central banks will end up winning the game, although they're winning the hand right now.
Well, it's the typical progression when you move from a money system that's backed by, you know, true commodities like gold or silver to one that's just paper and not really backed by anything, is it tends over time to get more and more unstable and more volatile. And, you know, we had a very stable country before 1913 and through 50s and 60s, and it's just gotten progressively more volatile as we get further and further away from our gold standard, silver standard, and on a floating currency exchange, and all the countries of the world are doing that now. Don't you think that's a big part of this increasing boom-bust volatility that seems to be happening faster and faster? Where do you think this is all going to end? I mean, do you think we're going to go back to a gold standard or back to some kind of metal standard? Or
I do not know. I mean, one thing about high-risk environments is that you just do not know what's going to happen in the end.
It's caused by having so much paper currency that's not backed by anything and all the...
I do. One brilliant thing that happened in 72, although Nixon disassociated the dollar from gold, it struck an agreement with Saudi Arabia for oil to be paid in dollars. Therefore, therefore, because of this agreement, the dollar was backed by oil. So yes, we did lose the gold standard, but the gold standard was replaced by what? The oil standard.
I've never heard anybody say that before. That's very interesting.
Now, how long could this last? It has already lasted for over 40 years.
But there's rumblings against that now, too, so...
We're in a high-risk environment. You cannot calculate what the outcome is going to be.
I would just say the overview is that while we're in this high-risk environment, I think we're both in agreement that being more cautious and protecting just capital preservation is top priority. And as this high-risk environment fades and maybe we move into a bargain environment possibly a few years from now where there's lots of great bargains to buy, that's when you'd want to reemploy the cash that hopefully you're saving now and using it for later when there's, you know, sort of the Warren Buffett approach, waiting for bargains. And I think that's the safer approach at this time.
Glenn, thank you. Have a great day.
Okay. I appreciate it. Great conversation.
You too, and there too.